Hey guys, thanks for joining us for this 147th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include actor Max Casella. You might remember him from Doogie Howser. He's got a new movie, That Cold Dead Look in Your Eyes, which will be available on demand coming up tomorrow, November 9th. We'll also visit with musician, composer, and author Warren Ellis about his new book, Nina Simone's Gum. And we'll visit with our monthly visit with our good friend Meathead Goldwyn. We'll talk about Thanksgiving turkey and stuffing ideas, some uses for your leftover turkey. Also, he's got some new rubs and barbecue sauce that are available now. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, comment, leave some feedback, check out the shop, and share with your friends. Now, in the endless search to find some common ground among Americans, a recent poll asked, what do you primarily use your dishwasher for? And the number one answer was to wash dishes, which is obvious, right? Well, despite it being the top answer, only 60% of people primarily use their dishwasher for washing dishes. So what's up with everyone else? Well, 25% said they don't have a dishwasher, so those people should have probably been filtered out. Now, 5% of people have a dishwasher but don't use it. 5% said they primarily use it as just a rack to dry hand wash dishes, and another 5% use it as an overflow cupboard to store kitchen items. And that leaves about 1%, which just said other. Got a new movie that is going to be available on demand tomorrow. It's called That Cold Dead Look in Your Eyes. And got Max Casella with us today. And Max, first off, it's a privilege to have a chance to visit with you, brother.
Likewise. Thank you.
Now, Max, tell our listeners just a little insight into the new movie. And man alive, the times we're living in, it's different taking in movies these days, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The movie centers on a young Frenchman living in New York named Leonard. And the love of his life at the beginning of the movie dumps him over one night of infidelity that he had. He's horribly depressed and guilty. He loses his job. I play the owner of the restaurant that he works for me as a chef. The reason he loses his job is that he suddenly forgets how to cook. He's poisons the customers accidentally, not in a deadly, just gets them sick. So he gets fired. He's starting to hallucinate really, really badly. And he thinks he's going insane. And he may not be wrong about that. Coincidentally, all these tiny little electronic boxes called theta boxes have mysteriously overnight appeared all over New York City. And they claim to deliver super high speed cellular service. But what that's actually doing is driving everyone insane and causing everyone to hallucinate horribly. Although we don't know for sure if it's not Leonard who's hallucinating everybody else or if everybody else is also part of the mental cracking up. So it just spirals out of control from there. And it's he goes, the reason why it's called That Cold Dead Look in Your Eyes is because everybody has these whitened eyes like they're zombies. And then they're back to normal again in a flash, you know, and it's like very, very trippy and disturbing. And it taps into a real like paranoia that's in the country right now around the vaccines and mandates. And do we trust the government? Do we not trust the government? If I watch this channel, they tell me one truth. If I watch that channel, they're telling me another truth. We don't know what the real truth is. Mistrust in governments is always well placed as far as I'm concerned. Whichever side of the aisle that you identify with, I personally have no use for either party, frankly. But the movie taps into this kind of paranoia and heartbreak, loneliness, mental illness. And it's very disturbing. And it's actually beautifully made film. It's beautifully shot, beautifully acted. Music is outstanding. So I couldn't recommend it enough. It's on video on demand tomorrow. You can check it out on Amazon Prime. The director is Onur Tükel. He's a Turkish-American director from South Carolina. And you should see his other films. I did two other movies with him called Applesauce, was how we met. He offered me a role in his dark comedy this hilarious movie called Applesauce. And we've been fast friends ever since then. We did a movie during the lockdown last summer called Scenes from an Empty Church with myself, Kevin Corrigan, and Thomas J. Ryan as two priests who are sequestered away in their church, which had to close its doors after the older priest died of COVID. And then I show up as Kevin's college buddy. And it takes very like supernatural and spiritual turns, twists and turns. It's a beautiful film. That's also on Amazon. But check out Owner Tuchel's films. He's the best director you probably haven't heard of yet.
Now, you talked about the distrust of the government. Now, this movie, was the screenplay, was this all done pre-COVID or was this done and recorded during COVID?
It was made pre-COVID. Coincidentally, it was pre-COVID. We filmed it before the lockdown. So it was 2019 and he had to hold it back. He's made and released a film after. Scenes from an Empty Church was made after and released first. So, yeah, this was made before the pandemic started.
He must have had a little bit of insight or some foreknowledge, it seems like, with the way the world went up.
It started with Owner being paranoid about 5G. You know, I don't know anything about 5G. And I guess it depends on who you listen to. Maybe it's completely safe. But, you know, most people with a head on their shoulders are going like, I don't trust the government. I don't trust corporations. They poison us to make more money. Their bottom line is all they care about. You know what I mean? They don't really trust these people. So Owner was just tapping into that. You know, he zeroed in on 5G. So he just took it from there. It's not called 5G in the movie, obviously. It's called, these things are called theta boxes. But that's kind of where he got the idea from the film to start out with.
Now, for you, Max, this last couple of years, where has your inspiration been? Have you found inspiration in lighter or darker things than normal, if you will?
It doesn't really matter to me. It's just acting is something I love to do. So it doesn't matter. I just did. Oftentimes I'm in movies where there's both, you know, drama and comedy. And oftentimes I bring the comedic elements to it just naturally. Without really saying, I'm going to make this a comedic role. It just happens, you know, like I just take it as is, you know, the character's written a certain way. I take the ball and I run with it. I just love my job. So it doesn't matter to me if it's a drama or a comedy, frankly.
How has the filming process changed? I mean, you've been around for a few years. You've seen it go through the social media, into the on-demand and all that. How has this last 2 years, even maybe threw things a little more in flux, right?
Well, you know, because you couldn't go to the cinema, right? So you had to, everything was already going in the streaming thing. It was already just this, right? COVID just put the nail in the coffin for you're ever really going to be seeing a non-Marvel movie or a non-blockbuster movie in a movie theater. I mean, yes, here in New York, you still have the Angelica Film Center, you know, you still have art house movie theaters. I'm not going the way I used to go anymore. I'm not, there's nothing get me off the couch to go to a movie theater. I hardly ever go see plays. I don't know. I just, most movies that you would think you'd want to see in a theater, I don't like those kind of movies. The movies I like, you got to watch them on TV. You stream them. You know what I mean? I'm not into Marvel stuff. I'm not into most Hollywood movies because they are very, very safe and corporate and you know, squeaky clean. And they're just selling you products. They're not really telling you stories. That stuff kind of turns my stomach.
How important is that as an artist to be able to say some things, to maybe ruffle some feathers? And I think sometimes it takes ruffling feathers to get conversations going in the first place, right?
It's not so much even that. It's just that I don't like censorship and I don't like things being like not true because you can't say them. You know, and like corporations, they don't like to take any, they're not in the business of taking chances. Right. So things end up becoming more and more the same. So we keep rebooting things, you know. Now everything has its own universe, which is just a code word for franchise, like McDonald's, you know, within the Ghostbusters universe. You start hearing these words now, you know. And all they mean is like, oh, we don't have to make, we only have to make one movie. We just keep churning it out, you know. That said, I'm a hypocrite because I would love nothing more than to do a Marvel movie and make tons of money. I don't like, you know, I love doing theater. I don't like being paid $500 a week. You know, I do have two mortgages, two kids, and I like to live a comfortable lifestyle. I've been lucky enough to do that. But I would love to be in those movies. I don't want to watch those movies, you know, frankly.
But you'll pay the bills with them, right?
I would love to. Absolutely. Or better yet, I'd rather be on a great TV show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's awesome. Well, again, the new movie that Cole did, Look in Your Eyes, available on demand tomorrow. And is it going to be in select theaters later on as well, too?
I have not heard. Okay. I can't say for sure about that. I have not heard that.
All right. Now, Max, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with everything you've got going social media-wise as well, sir.
I'm only on the Instagrams. You can find me on Instagram at Max, M-A-X dot Casella, C-A-S-E-L-L-A. That's where I'm at. That's where I'm posting all my videos and trailers and all my stuff that I'm doing, as well as some of my artwork. You know, I'm an artist too. And that's that. That's where you find me.
There you go. Check him out on Instagram. Check out the movie available tomorrow, That Cold Dead Look in Your Eyes. Max, it's been great to visit with you, brother. Appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Daylight saving time ended yesterday, and we fell back, meaning everyone got an extra hour of sleep. So if you're tired today anyway, one of these things might have something to do with it. A survey of 1,500 American workers looked at the top reasons we feel exhausted in any given day, and here are the top 10. Number 1, general stress. Over 60% of people say it's a main reason they feel tired a lot. Number 2, anxiety. Number 3, sleep issues or insomnia. Number 4, irregular sleep schedules. You know, shifting the clocks definitely doesn't help with that one. Number 5, family obligations. Number 6, depression. Number 7, dealing with your kids. Number 8, worrying about work. Number 9, working too many hours. And number 10, inconsistent work hours, which probably ties in with irregular sleep schedules. Now, the top ways that we cope with being tired are by drinking coffee or consuming caffeine, listening to music, snacking, napping, and just zoning out.
Got an offbeat take of a new story. It's called Nina Simone's Gum. We've got musician and composer Warren Ellis on the line with us. And Warren, first off, I appreciate you taking some time to be on the show.
Absolute pleasure to be here. I'm really happy to talk about the book, actually.
Now, how did the idea for Nina Simone's Gum, where did that first come from for you?
The idea for the book came from actually Dan Papps from Faber, and he contacted me about a year ago to see if I was interested in writing something, if I'd ever thought of it. And I hadn't, you know, I'd tried writing poetry as in my 20s, and it just never really went anywhere. And then I got into music, and that sort of took over every aspect of my life. And then I told him I wasn't interested in writing a memoir or anything like that. And he said, well, if you have another idea, let me know. And then towards the end of 2019, when Nick had asked me to put, if I wanted something to put in his exhibitions, Stranger Than Kindness in the Royal Danish Library, I said, you know, would you like my chewing gum from Nina Simone? And he said, would I like it? That is exactly what this exhibition is about. You know, that's what it's all about. So I'd agreed to give him it, but I put it on display. But it had never been out of my sight. I'd never even really looked at it. Just the thought of it being in there was enough. And I felt like my whole creative output had been because of the fact that I'd taken care of this holy relic, and that I basically had worshipped at its altar. And it was just this private thing that I conducted. You know, nobody knew about it. And I was terrified, actually, that it would be lost in the process or something would happen. So I wanted to get copies of it made, at least so that I had some trace of it. And as that unfolded, as I started getting images of it. I just saw this thing that I've seen happen in the studio all the time, where people get under the littlest of ideas and act with love and care and act with their best personality and their best characters to try and help it take flight. And I was so moved by this. And I was with all these photos and people texting me saying, like, the Gummers, it's on the plane now. We've got a seat for it and your violin, you know. I was so moved by all this that I called Dan and said, look, I think I might have an idea for a photo book. And it started like that. And then I went in and presented my idea to them in February of 2020. And they all just looked at each other. Alexa burst into tears when she saw the copies in the box. And they just said, we don't need to talk about this. We want you to write it. So that was where the idea came from. And you know, initially I thought it was a photo book with a bit of a guide from me about this happened and this happened. But then, you know, in talking to people about it, I realized I need to explain why I did it. So it kind of became a fragmentary memoir, but more along the lines of something where you're trying to work out why you did something, you know, that I never thought about why I did it. And ultimately it made me look at why I care about music. And I realized, you know, music has been a sort of spiritual quest for me all my life. You know, I was told there was a God and I believed in a God. I believed in something and I didn't really know what that was. You know, I said prayers as a kid. Something developed in me and I think I transferred that to vibration. You know, when I heard John Coltrane, I believe, and I still believe, I was listening to the voice of God, to the voice of something not of this earth. And when I heard Alice Coltrane, it was the same. And, you know, I realized that music for me helped me find my place in the world. I often find it really hard to navigate the world. And music has this emotional way of communicating with me that helps me deal with things. And so, you know, I think the book sort of touches on these things. It touches on, I think, the fact that you know, that we are ideas, people are ideas, and that we need to come in contact with the right people. Like that teacher that pointed at something you did and said, this is really good, this thing that you're doing. This thing of affirmation that's so important to us as people, that can fuel our imagination, give us confidence. And those people come across, we come across these people, and when we do, they can alter the course of our life. And I think that's what looking at this made me do, you know. So I traced the story of where how I got the gum and where I kept it. And because for me, you know, I was taking care of a holy relic and it was pointed out to me by people who got sort of caught up in the whole story that was what I was dealing with. But then beyond that, it made me look at why I did it, you know, why I cared enough to do it. And that had to be pointed out to me because I never even thought about why I did it, you know. So the book became something else, much against my better judgment. I didn't want to write a memoir because I just don't feel my life is interesting, and I certainly don't want to tell it, you know. Like, I realize I've had things happen in my life that, you know, I'm really grateful for, you know, that I've been able to make music for 30 years, the thing that I love. Is not lost on me ever. You know, the fact that I can get out and play on a stage is one of the greatest honors of my life, that I can get out on that sacred stage. The stage is a sacred place, that I can get out there and commune with people and commune with something, whatever it is that happens up there that's not of this world. You know, that's not lost on me. And the day that it is, I don't deserve to be up there.
Mm.
But you know, beyond that, you know, the kind of, I think the thing that I saw is what I see in the studio, and it's something I usually can't put words to, is watching people get underneath something so tiny, something you can't even see. You know, the thing that attracts people to it is their connection with Nina Simone, but it's also their connection to absolutely nothing that you cannot touch. It's this nothing around it that's so powerful. You know, like the last breath of Thomas Edison that's kept in a test tube, like the Loch Ness Monster, you know, like these things, like religion, you know, the way that we don't need to see anything to believe in something. And this is the power that we have. And I think, last year, during the whole pandemic situation that continues, I was aware that of all the chaos and things like that. And I, when I was writing this, I wanted it really to be about the wonder and awe of things. I wanted it to be about the great things that we can do, you know, when our imagination is set in flight. Because, you know, you might the rage machine that was going on in America with the whole Trump thing, and wherever you were, you know, like with how people were dealing with the COVID situation and the suffering that was going on. And, you know, I, at one point I just felt so powerless. And, you know, I guess, you know, I just was so sort of sick of hearing us being told that we were bad. And, you know, I don't know, like I just wanted to write something that celebrates the kind of great things that we can do.
And to find the sacred in the mundane, if you will, for you to express that and to get feedback from that, what does that mean to you on a personal and on a creative level?
Well, you know, approaching it was quite tricky, because if I tried to write about it in a kind of deep way, it fell really flat. But the simpler I wrote about it, when I wrote about it, how I saw it and how I felt about it, the book is purely about feelings. It's about emotions, you know. When I wrote about it like that, then it took flight, you know. And so the editing process was mainly about cutting out lots of stuff where I was overshooting with things, you know. And I think that's the thing that's really been so humbling about the book is the reaction to it, because people have got the greater idea that's going on, and people who come up to me and they say, you know, I don't believe in religion and things like that, but this book's helped me understand why people do. You know, it's helped me understand why you can work, and I can see things that I do that are like this. You know, a lot of people I speak to, they read themselves into it, their story, their little things that they have, you know, like I write about in the book, that, you know, like a little memory markers that remind us of things. Our memory is what defines us, you know. So, you know, you open up if you've got a box of things, the little things that only mean something to you, they remind you of your life, you know, or people you've come into contact with. It might be a shoe from your kid, a little booty. It might be a packet of cigarettes from a loved one that you lost, whatever it is, you know, something that really outside of your orbit means nothing at all to anybody else. But these little talismans for us are really important.
Again, Warren Ellis, I want to make sure and let folks know where they can find more info about the book we've been talking about, Nina Simone's Gum, sorry about that, and everything you've got going social-wise as well, sir.
Well, the book is out on Faber, I believe, in America. You can find out about that and you know, I guess social media and things like that. There's another thing that I've done that's connected to this is I've established a park in Sumatra for animals with special needs. I bought some land at the start of the year, and this kind of came out of last year's experience with the pandemic and seeing the way that we became more aware of our need for community, this thing that had disappeared. And I was so moved watching people rally around people struggling, you know, people helping people get their food to elderly people, people raising money for homeless people, raising money for crew around us that were out of jobs. I was really moved by that, and I became involved with this organization, and I bought some land and donated it to them. And we're building an animal sanctuary for animals with special needs. We have monkeys with no arms. We have monkeys with brain damage that have been beaten up. And again, it was like with the gum, I put the idea out there. We were crowdfunded within 2 months. We're building the park. You can watch it on real time as it happens. It's Alice Park Sumatra on Instagram. And I just cannot imagine my life without it at all. I just cannot imagine my life without the park. It opened my heart to something, I think, you know, that like nothing else has ever done before. But again, it's the story of the gum too, this thing of a little idea, putting it out there and then watching people get underneath it, you know, and carry it. So you can find out about those things there, and, you know, hopefully the book's in decent bookshops available. to purchase or flick through.
There you go again. Warren, it has been a real privilege to visit with you. Looking forward to spending some more time with the book myself. Check it out, Nina Simone's Gum. And Warren, I hope you have a great rest of your week, sir.
I hope you do as well. You take care.
Now, daylight saving time just ended, and the days are getting shorter. That means we'll get less and less sunlight, which can bring on symptoms of SAD, or seasonal affective disorder. But a new poll found more coffee might help. A study was funded by a bunch of coffee companies, so do keep that in mind. And they claim it was fair and unbiased, but who knows? Now, it found that as the days get shorter and colder, 21% of us feel more anxious. 24% find it harder to concentrate. 25% feel less motivated to exercise, and 28% are more likely to feel sad in general. Now, a lot of people in the survey said coffee seems to help with those issues. 21% said it helps them concentrate. 20% said it improves their mood in general. And 29% said they drink coffee to feel more energetic. The study didn't look at exactly how much coffee the average person should drink, but a study back in 2010 suggested that one cup every 4 hours could make a difference. It is time for our monthly visit with our good friend Meathead Goldwyn. I like to call him the Grand Poobah of the grill. He is also a Hall of Famer, and also he's got rubs and sauces that are officially out now. We can talk about those as well. And Meathead, it is always good to see you, my friend.
Always good to see you too. I'm psyched because just around the corner is my favorite holiday of the year. It's the one holiday built around food. And you know, just to be a little philosophical for a moment, when you think about it, no matter how divided we are as a society, politically, racially, ethnically, gender, most of us sit down on Thanksgiving and eat the same meal.
Yeah, we do.
Like one giant table across the country, turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing, sweet potatoes. I mean, that's just I'm sorry, folks. We're laughing here because my camera just went haywire.
That's the best view we've had all the whole times we've had all of our visits. That's the best view we've had.
Yeah. It's just a holiday that, you know, we can all sort of hold hands across the country and enjoy together as one unit. And there's nothing like it anywhere else in the world. You know, no other country that I'm aware of has a holiday where they all eat the same meal. They all celebrate the same thing. I just think it's wonderful.
And every year, it seems like every year we end up delving into spatchcocking. I know that's not something that we've mentioned yet that we're going to talk about. I know we're going to talk turkey and stuffing and how avoid dry turkey inside or outside.
Well, you know, that's the bane of Thanksgiving is we do all eat the same meal and we all suffer through dry turkey. It doesn't have to be. The problem is that you're supposed to cook turkey to 165 degrees internal temperature, which is way up there in the well done range. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of us will eat a steak in the medium rare range, which is 130 to 135. That's 30 degrees less. And it's nice and tender and juicy. Mm-hmm. We don't like turkey at that temperature. It's kind of stringy and, you know, a little slimy. But and also there's a safety risk. So we cook it up to 160. What USDA says 165. 160 will do because when you take it off, it continues to cook because there's heat built up in it. Now, we do talk about spatchcock because the core concept here is that turkey is at least 75% water.
Right.
And all meats are. And as you heat them, the hotter you heat them, the more water evaporates and escapes. So you end up with dry. So the key here is to cook it at a low temperature and get it done as quickly as you can. And if you take a turkey and you leave it whole, like Norman Rockwell turkey, and you put the stuffing in the center, you've made this giant bowling ball. And it has to be 160, 165 in the center to be safe. And that means the center of the stuffing. So you need a really good digital thermometer. The pop-up thermometers you can't trust. You can get a really good digital thermometer for $30. They should be in your grocery or your hardware store. Those dial thermometers you can't trust. If you want a good buying guide, AmazingRibs.com, my website, has a good buying guide to thermometers. We don't sell any of them. We just recommend them. And you really want to, for things like turkey and chicken, you got to get it right. You overcook it and it's going to be it's cardboard. Yeah. So we like to spatchcock it, which is a kind of naughty sounding word for butterflying it. You cut the backbone out and you spread it out so it lays flat. And therefore, it's thinner and it's not as thick as cooking a whole big ball, especially stuffed. So you aren't going to cook the stuffing in the bird. It's safer that way to take the stuffing out of the bird. But I have a plan for that stuffing that you're going to love. I like to cook the bird over a drip pan. I get a big old baking pan, put it underneath the bird. And in there, I like to put some carrots, some celery, some apples. I cut out the neck and all the excess skin from the front cavity, the rear cavity, all the stuff that comes in the bag, except the liver. Don't put the liver in there. All that stuff goes in the pan, and you fill the pan with water or chicken stock and maybe a little wine or something. And what you're doing is as the bird is roasting, you're making a soup. A turkey stock, a turkey soup that is wonderful, really flavorful. The drippings from the bird get in there. And then when the bird is just about done, before it's done, you pull that out and you strain it. And now you have this marvelous stock, which is the base for your gravy. If you want to add flour and make a thick gravy, you can. But you don't need to. It's really good thin like this. And I just drink it by the cup at the day after Thanksgiving. There's just a bunch of it left over. But we're going to use that to make our stuffing, or as the purists will say, it's a dressing. It's not a stuffing if it's not in the bird. But regardless, I call them muffings because I take the stuffing. Now you mix in a little egg. The ratio is 2 eggs for 1 pound of dry bread. 2 eggs to 1 pound of dry bread. You mix it in. Use your regular stuffing mix. If you want a good stuffing mix, go to my recipe on AmazingRibs.com for the muffings. Just enter muffings in the search box, and I have the whole recipe in the process. But you want to dry the bread, and you can dry it in the toaster, which gives it some extra flavor, or throw it on the grill and get some grill flavor on it. And you make your stuffing with these eggs, and you put them in muffin tins, just like you would make muffins. And when the egg works like a binder. And it doesn't make an odd flavor to it. And that way, everybody gets this muffin of stuffing. Everybody gets exactly the same. And, you know, everybody wants the crunchy exterior bits. Well, everybody's got one. You know, you got the muffin tops. Remember Seinfeld right. with the muffin tops? Stuffing muffin tops, man, they're great. And so everybody gets a stuffing muffin on the side. And there's this marvelous gravy, which you can use in preparing the muffins. It's just absolutely a great way to do stuffing. And to speed along cooking of the bird. Now, if you've got a huge crowd coming over, it's much better to get 2 small birds than 1 big bird. The really big birds are older and the meat is tougher. And again, it's thicker. The breasts are really thick. They take longer to cook. It's going to dry out the exterior. So get 2 smaller birds. They'll cook faster and you'll have more juicy, more tender, a better turkey.
Now, I'm not the smartest, but you talk about putting the tray under your turkey. On a grill like mine, are you talking about putting the turkey up on the top rack and then putting the tray underneath that? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, it depends. Every grill is going to be different. And you can do this indoors, too, by the way. You can spatchcock the bird and lay it on top of a rack right in the kitchen, and you put the pan. It's like you get the biggest roasting pan you've got and put it underneath the bird. So on your grill, you would put it under the cooking grate if you can fit it under there, or you put it on top of the cooking grate. And then I go into the kitchen, take one of the racks out of the stove and lay it on top of that grate. So you just want to put it above the pan. And by the way, those roasting pans that have the V-shaped rack, mm-hmm. when you put the bird in there, the part of the bird that is below the top of the pan is not going to get as much warm air, and it's going to cook at a different rate. And that's why the underside of your turkey is always tan and soggy and undercooked. You want to lift the bird above. Those V-shaped racks are garbage. Put it on top of the, put it above the drip pan so that the air can circulate all around and cook all the bird.
That's something I've always wondered about too. I've got to be extremely careful about the turkey anyway because of the dryness, and it just absolutely tears my ulcer up. So you're saying take it completely out of the V rack and just put it on a regular rack?
Hover it above the rack so that warm air circulates all around, and you can figure out how whether you're cooking it indoors or outdoors. Just hover it above the above the pan. Put all the fixings for the gravy in the pan and catch the drippings. But if it's hovering above, then it's going to get warm air circulating all around. It's going to cook faster, and you won't have that soggy underside.
Now, what do you like to pair with your Thanksgiving meal as well, aside from the muffins? what other specific sides do you like?
I go traditional, man. I mean, I just absolutely, all year round, I love sweet potatoes. Of course, I go to my brother-in-law's house, and he has three daughters. They're all now in their 40s, and they have three or four kids each. And my wife and I, and we all show up. So everybody brings a dish. So I just eat whatever's put in front of me. One of them makes this great corn casserole, which is fantastic. I've got to get that recipe from her. Sweet potatoes, not real big on the marshmallows and the sweet potatoes. I've kind of outgrown my sweet tooth, you know, but I do like sweet potatoes. And if you want to put a little of maple syrup or honey on there, I won't complain. Cranberry sauce. My wife makes a cranberry sauce with Asian pears. Hmm. Asian pears and some grated orange zest. And there's a recipe for cranberries out there that has horseradish in it. It's called Mama Stamberg's, S-T-A-M-B-E-R-G, Mama Stamberg's cranberry sauce. It comes out kind of pink and creamy, but it's really good with the horseradish.
Wow.
Just Google Mama Stamberg's cranberry sauce. You know, green beans. I do green beans. I learned a technique when I went to France where they quickly parboil them so they're mostly cooked. Then they throw them in a frying pan with some duck fat. Duck fat's really flavorful. Mm-hmm. They scorch it so it gets a little brown on the outside, and then they throw in a handful of breadcrumbs, and the breadcrumbs stick to the green beans. And so you have kind of crunchy, scalded, tender and juicy green beans. I really like them that way too. It's just a feast, man. I eat whatever. What do you do? What do you guys serve? You have it at your house?
We do. My daughter is the turkey fan, because of my ulcer, I make a small turkey for her. Then I usually do a spiral cut ham is what I do. It's safe on me.
Yeah, that's, you know, a lot of people do. I made this shtick about everybody eats turkey, but a lot of people do ham for Thanksgiving. By the way, I just finished an ebook on turkey. Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon for $3.99, and it's an ebook. You download it from Amazon. It's a Kindle book, and you can. It has how to deep fry turkey. It has this recipe that I just talked about, spatchcock with the gravy. It has Walt Disney turkey legs. If you've ever been to Disney World, you see these people walking around. They look like dinosaur legs. They're just huge turkey legs, and they're cured in smoke. They have a really special flavor. I know how to do it, and the recipe for that's in there. So everything you ever need to know about turkey in this little $3.99 ebook. And if you want to get one, and you don't want to spend $3.99, you can order one of my company's new sauces and rubs, and you'll get the ebook for free.
Yeah, and tell our listeners a little bit about the new. Let me see. I want to make sure I get this right. The Meatheads Amazing Seasonings and Dry Brine, or the Amazing Good Enough to Drink KC Salad Barbecue Sauce. How about
that?
And
you take good notes. That's great. Thank you. we put out three rubs. And there's a poultry rub in there, and it's really good on turkey. There's a pork rub, and then there's a red meat rub. And I'll tell you, I have all my life been a salt and pepper guy on steaks, never a sauce, never anything else. And this red meat rub is just awesome on steak. And my wife won't let me cook a steak without it, or a burger. It's just fantastic. There's a pork rub in there that you absolutely need for doing ribs and such. And then we did a Kansas City style, a great sweet red, smoky, and it's got a little secret ingredient that I can't tell you about. But it's really nice. And I've had a number of people tell me it's the best barbecue sauce they've ever had. They're just came on the market, so they're only available on our website now, but they will be in stores by spring, hopefully. And if you want to try them, they're on my website. And if you buy them, there's a little QR code that will let you get a free ebook cookbook. And there's four of them to choose from, but turkey is one of them.
How about that? Now, how many years have you been delving into the science on turkey? I mean, was turkey one of the early ones that you really delved into?
Yeah. I launched the website in 2005 with just ribs. You know, that's how we got the name Amazing Ribs. I've been a cook all my life. My dad had a restaurant for a while. A great story behind that. In Sarasota, Florida, he opened a restaurant. He bought a restaurant named Oleander. And it was only after the restaurant failed did we realize that oleander is a poisonous plant. That's where my cooking career starts, with poisonous plants. But I like the taste of turkey and all the stuff that goes with it. And certainly I love turkey sandwiches and turkey pot pie and stuff the day after. But turkey was one of the very first recipes I started experimenting with, because I just wanted to make a great turkey. And if you do this gravy in the drip pan underneath and don't thicken it with flour, if you thicken it with flour, it just kind of sits on top of the meat. But if you don't thicken it and you drizzle it on top of the meat, it will penetrate. It will soak into the meat and it'll moisturize the meat, even if it's been overcooked. And it just has a wallop of flavor. And I explain in detail, both on AmazingRibs.com and in this e-cookbook, how to get that right. It really makes a huge difference.
And obviously, we always talk about the grilling, but what is one of your favorite post-Thanksgiving turkey repurposes, if you will?
Well, they're pot pie. Chicken pot pie, of course, and why not turkey pot pie? They're really simple. You can, of course, buy pie shell pre-cooked or pre-made, prefabricated, right. Got to be baked, or you can make your own pie shell. And then, you know, in goes the turkey, and then you use the gravy to make the sauce that goes in there with some, you know, peas and carrots and whatever else you want to toss in there. And that's absolutely wonderful. And with the smoked turkey, you know, smoke and turkey absolutely love each other, but you got to be careful. If you're going to cook it outdoors or on a smoker, don't go crazy with the smoke. Too much smoke on turkey overwhelms it. Just go light on the smoke. You can do it on a grill, a gas grill or a charcoal grill. Put it on the indirect heat side, not directly above the flame, away from the flame. And then you can throw wood on top of the flame and get some smoke circulating. Just, you know, a handful or two of wood, and that's all it needs. Everybody's had smoked turkey, even in the deli counters, and it goes great in those pot pies. And of course, sandwiches, leftover turkey sandwich with a little cranberry sauce on the sandwich. Oh my, that's good stuff.
And getting some ambiance there too.
Yeah, you heard that. Yeah. Yeah, man. You know, wherever you live, choose your noise, my wife says. You know, wherever you live, you get airplanes, you get trains, you get sirens.
Now, we talked Thanksgiving, we've talked post-Thanksgiving. What is the biggest holiday engorgement that you look forward to? Are there any candies as we get closer to Christmas, any of those kind of goodies you really look forward to?
We do have some food traditions in this country. Of course, turkey is Thanksgiving. Christmas, a lot of people do turkey, or of course there's the Christmas goose. That's not hugely popular in this country, but it is very popular in England, or in Europe. Geese are very popular over there. But a lot of people will do a ham. Or in my case, we have a tradition of a rib roast, a beef rib roast. You know, it sets you back a month's pay, but you get a big old huge beef rib roast, and that's so festive. You can do it with a tenderloin or a filet mignon. And then, you know, Easter, a lot of people do ham for Easter, and that's your traditional Easter. But spring lamb is also really popular. So we have, and then, of course, 4th of July for me is a ribs holiday. You got to have ribs on the 4th of July. We do have these holidays and their traditions, but none of them is quite so prescribed as Thanksgiving with turkey.
That's right. And Meathead, always want to make sure and let folks know if they want to find more info about the rubs, about the sauce, about any of the recipes we've talked about. Where's the best place for folks to do all that?
AmazingRibs.com is our website. There's 2,000 pages of website that are free. If you really are deep into it and you want to join our Pitmaster Club, there's a lot of cool benefits to that. I have a book on the market. It should be in almost any bookstore called Meathead. Duh. And there's four ebooks on Amazon. Just search for my name, Meathead. And, there's one on ribs, chicken, sous vide to the grill, and then now turkey. And we'll have more as time goes by.
All right. Well, Meathead, always great to visit with you. I'm so excited. The rubs and the sauces are out. That's good stuff.
Yeah, they are. And you can expect a Christmas package.
I will accept it. I will accept that. Well, Meathead, always good to visit with you, sir. And look forward to catching up again next month.
Always fun to talk to you. I love talking to people who love food.
Well, thanks again for joining us for this 147th episode in Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, a question, maybe anything else you'd like to know, you can hit me up on the contact page at gqwithcam.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Facebook at gqwithcam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, you can visit our merch store where we've got hoodies, shirts, tumblers, mugs, stickers, and more. That's gqwithcam.com/shop. And if you do have a special guest idea, email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Well, do want to say thanks to our good friend Brandon Allen for coming up with our theme music. We're going to let him play us out and hope you guys have a great rest of your day.